This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. And we're going to start out talking a little bit of basketball today. We're going to talk with Chris Solari, who is in Wisconsin covering the Michigan State-Wisconsin game. Michigan State-Wisconsin always has. And when I say always, I mean always has some very, very tough and good battles. And that has never changed. So you'll see a good game tonight between Wisconsin and Michigan State. So it's a very good game. So just be attention and pay close attention to it, because if you blink, you might miss something. That is such a good game, and it's been that way for a long, long time. So we'll talk about that, and then we will talk baseball. This is Fred Heumann's favorite sport, and we're going to talk baseball today with Jake Bosch Jr., the head coach of Michigan State baseball, and we'll talk a little baseball with him, just get his take on the upcoming baseball season. So give us a call, talk sports with us right here on AM 870. You know, it's one thing that I found out over the years. For a lot of years, for whatever reason, and I don't know why, many of the coaches that were coaching here just didn't coach. They didn't recruit local kids. And we put out some pretty good local area kids in the area. And for whatever reason, they didn't recruit them. But Jake Bosch Jr. has been recruiting them, and it's turned out quite well for him. So congratulations to Jake Bosch Jr., for recruiting the local kids and helping them become a quality top-flight team in the Big Ten. So give us a call. Talk to us right now, right here on AM 870 WKAR. Once again, 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. Now, when Michigan State plays Wisconsin tonight, you can expect just a barn burner of a game. They always play each other tough. They always play each game very significantly, and they play very hard. So just look out for a very good game between the two teams when they meet tonight. But that's them coming up, and they'll talk a little bit about that game, and we'll do that a little bit with Chris Solari. Get Chris on the line, and we'll talk with him. And then we'll talk with Jake Bosch Jr. about baseball today. So we'll get. I'm giving just a little break for Fred today, Jack. Fred Heumann loves his baseball.
Oh, does he ever?
So we'll give him a break here. We'll get Jake Bosch Jr. on today.
Fred will be so excited. Just the idea of having baseball here in the middle of January. Yeah.
Couple of weeks, it'll be around, and he'll be very happy, that's for sure.
Fred's the kind of guy who sits and watches those MLB Network replays all winter.
Yep.
And the best day of the year for him is when pitchers and catchers report.
Yep.
Spring training, that's it. That's his Christmas.
Okay. Well, let's see. We got Jake. We got Chris Solari on the line, so let's bring in Chris. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, Earl. How you been?
Hey, doing good. Got Jack Ebeling in here, and we're going to be talking about the game as well tonight.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Jack. How you been?
Good.
Feels like I haven't seen you in a couple days.
Right. That was fun.
Now this is going to be a tough game tonight. It's always, whenever Michigan State, Wisconsin plays, it's always a tough game.
Yeah.
And there's no question about that, Earl. I mean, the one thing about this is, and you see this now in most of the Big Ten games. I mean, these coaches know each other and their system so well. I mean, I wouldn't put it past Bo Ryan to be able to go and coach Tom Izzo's system and vice versa. I don't know if you agree with me on that, or Jack, or not. But
yeah. I mean, yeah, there are very few secrets. And yeah. Earl, that's one of the things that makes the Big Ten so tough is all these teams, you know, there are no surprises. But a lot of people think that Bo Ryan owns Tom Izzo. And there was a point where he won 7 out of 8.
Yeah.
But Michigan State's won the last 3, won 4 of the last 5, won 6 of the last 8. Mm-hmm. So Michigan State's done pretty well during these current players' careers.
Yeah, yes, they have, and they've done quite well, and we just have to take our hat off to Tom Izzo for what he's done in turning it around and beating Wisconsin. Wisconsin has always been a tough team, and what makes them unique, Jack, is they don't recruit top line players or Class A, Class B. They get good players. But they get players off the radar screen.
Absolutely. And, you know, you go through and you look at the recruiting rankings, whatever they mean, and they never match up with Wisconsin, either football or basketball. But, Chris, you've seen enough Wisconsin basketball to maybe help me with this. Every year when I get ready to do a preseason article and I have to pick the order of finish, I've started to take wherever I think Wisconsin is and move them up 2 spots because I always underestimate them by that much, and I don't know why.
Well, I think it's a fair thing, and I know exactly where it comes from. Is a lot of times when programs are based on defense, and you know that's something that even back to Dick Bennett, that Wisconsin has been all about is the defense on the basketball side. People kind of forget and maybe slough off a little bit about what they can do offensively out of that, and I think that's part of it. I mean, you know, maybe. And I don't want this to sound the wrong way, but maybe there's some race factor involved in it, too, because Wisconsin tends to have a lot of really big white guys, and that's, you know, the general makeup of the state of Wisconsin in some ways, too. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's perception, you know, but they're all good. I mean, Bo Ryan knows how to get good basketball players, sure. You know, race aside. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not. You know, it might just be an overreach, but... yeah, I mean, Bo Ryan is one heck of a basketball coach, and he's proven it year in, year out.
You know what else is interesting about that, Earl, is it isn't just Michigan State or Tom Izzo. Tom Crean, he hasn't beaten Bo Ryan since he's been in Bloomington.
Right.
Indiana's lost 11 in a row to the Badgers, and Wisconsin's the first team ever to win 5 straight in the Assembly Hall. So it isn't just Michigan State.
Yeah, it's something, and that sort of bodes well for Bo Ryan, because Bo's done a good job, and he's done a great job over the years, and you can't take that from him. He does that, and then he also plants the seeds in the other players, and he gets some good. I mean, he always gets good guards.
Yeah.
But he gets some pretty good big guys, and the difference between his big guys and the other big guys, for most part, can shoot from the outside. Yeah.
They have those stretch 4 men. They can go out there and hit a 20-footer. It opens up the lanes, and they have a system where they're constantly interchanging with the swing offense. Guys are coming in. The guards are posting. But I think if you look at what Wisconsin has done it's pretty amazing to look at the consistency they've had under this guy when they went decades until late in the Dick Bennett years and never had a sniff of the NCAA tournament. And now they're a fixture. You know, Bo Ryan's never finished worse than 4th in the Big Ten.
And that's
amazing.
It's pretty impressive stuff.
It is. I remember when Dick Ryan had his first press conference at the Big Ten meetings, and I was one of the few guys that went up, and I think I was probably the only guy that went up and talked to him, other than local guys. No one talked or said a word to Big Dick Bennett. I must have sat there, and he kept me there for at least a half hour.
Bennett, and then the transition. you know, they had a little bit of a break there. They had 1 year with Soderbergh, but then when they got rid of Brad and they brought in Bo Ryan, I don't think anyone saw this coming. I don't think even the Wisconsin people saw this coming.
No, they didn't, but they've got a good one now, and I know they're going to keep him or do whatever they have to to keep him. Were you surprised that the football coach left?
I was. How about you, Chris? I mean, I thought the Wisconsin job was pretty good. They've been to three straight Rose Bowls.
Yeah, I think Barry Alvarez did a great job of building that program to where where it was. And when Brett Bielema took it over, he took it to a different level. And especially with his comments when Urban Meyer came into the Big Ten and, you know, kind of disparaging the SEC a little bit. And it seemed like he was a company man in terms of the Big Ten. And to see him, you know, first, as far as we know, first chance he got to bolt. I mean, you know, everyone knows that John L. Smith had that Arkansas program kind of on the cusp.
Right.
I should say Bobby Petrino, and then John
Bobby
L. Smith,
Petrino did, yeah.
You know, shuffled it around. But so, you know, is it damaged goods right now? That's what I got to wonder. I mean, why would you leave an established brand like Wisconsin for something that could very well be damaged goods, especially in the SEC? I didn't get it, and it did surprise me.
I didn't get it either, and I wound up talking to a couple of the guys who are around Brett Bielema every day in Madison and trying to figure out what really happened. Apparently, he had lost a lot of assistant coaches.
He lost about five.
Yeah. And he had gone in.
And Paul Chris took
exactly.
a lot of those guys to bed.
Exactly. And he had gone in and he had asked for raises for those guys. And then he'd gone in again and he'd said, look, we're going to lose our staff. We're going to lose our coordinators. And it isn't because they don't like Wisconsin. It's because the market isn't fair for these guys. And apparently he was told, well, this is Wisconsin. That's the way we're going to do things. And he got frustrated with that. I know he's making a little bit more money. He's making, I think, $750,000 a year more, which is a lot, but in terms of what a head coach at that level would make, it's not like he got a salary doubled. And
don't discount the fact that he doesn't have to live through Wisconsin winters anymore, too, especially on a day like today.
That's a factor, but he has to live through Alabama and Florida in terms of on-the-field competition and LSU. And I thought he had a pretty good deal over there. Obviously, he had Ohio State to deal with in that division. But it's not like being in the SEC West. He's probably got the fourth best program there right now, and I don't see Alabama and LSU going anywhere.
They're going to be there for a long, long time. But it's good competition. I mean, it'd be nice to see the Big Ten rise to that level of competition. The Big Ten hasn't been really competitive for a long time, other than Wisconsin, Ohio State, Michigan State for a few years. Mm-hmm. We don't know if they'll keep it going, but at least we've had a few ups and downs, but nothing close to the SEC.
Chris, you're a Pennsylvania guy. Do you think we will ever, in your lifetime, see the Big Ten a level playing field with the SEC again?
You know, I don't, and I think in part because there's been such a population shift.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, a lot of these Rust Belt people that built the Pennsylvania and Ohio football factories, they've graduated from college, they got their degree, they played football, and they all migrated south. And that's why I think you see a lot of the talent in Florida and Texas and California and all these warm weather places, because a lot of these people just got up and left, you know, because of the economy, because of jobs, whatever it may be. And, you know, I mean, Ohio still produces a great number of good football players, very, very good football players, but I think it's diminished in some of the other areas.
You know, Earl, I think you and I talked about this at the end of the year, but one of the big factors, they say, in terms of the South, the development, the population shift, was the popularizing of air conditioning.
Yes.
And when that happened, the South went from being kind of an afterthought to being the place to be. And it's just got so many players down there now. These football players, you can get the 100th best player in Florida, and you're getting a pretty good player.
And that's the other thing, because they, as you remember, they used to didn't have indoor facilities. Now every one of them has an indoor facility, and it seems to be even working for them even better.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Well, Jack, I think Jack brought up another good point, too, about when you're talking about Brett Bielema, too, in terms of the salary and that. I thought that it was interesting that Barry Alvarez didn't try and pilfer someone else from another school. He went to a smaller school, Utah State,
right?
You know, a guy that he saw in Gary Anderson who, you know, built a program in the middle of nowhere into something marginal. And I think that that kind of did point to me that there was a financial aspect of this going on there, too. Mm-hmm. I think that was something that was pretty evident.
A lot of people who know Gary Anderson say he's a heck of a football coach, but had anyone heard of Brett Bielema before he got the job? I mean, Barry Alvarez wasn't a big name. He'd been a coordinator at Notre Dame, and he'd been at Nebraska as a player. But a lot of people didn't know who Barry Alvarez was, and certainly very few knew Brett Bielema. But, you know, if you come in, you got a system, you can stick to it, and you can get the guys. Wisconsin does a great job of finding guys and developing them. And, you know, you can say the same thing about Kansas State. Some of those guys that worked for Hayden Fry from that staff, you look back at the staff photo.
That was a great staff.
It's unbelievable, the number of coaches who came out of that place. I mean, Kirk Ferentz was on that staff. The Stoops brothers. You know, it's incredible what he did in Iowa City, and that led to the Wisconsin program, and Hayden Fry's footprints are everywhere with that.
That's for sure. The time now is 22 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Fighting continues in Mali, where French and local forces continue to battle Islamic militants. In neighboring Algeria, a hostage standoff ends with the deaths of dozens of captives and attackers. I'm Neil Conan. What's at stake in Northern Africa, the latest front in the war with Al-Qaeda? Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Scattered snow and partly sunny and a high today of 10 degrees. Tonight, the low near zero, mostly cloudy with scattered snow. Cloudy Wednesday with scattered snow and a high of 19. Thursday becoming partly sunny with scattered snow and a high of 18 degrees. This is Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. And now we hope to talk a little baseball with Jake Boss Jr., and we'll talk with him. And then we'll move on, and Jack and I will bring up a few systems, a few games. Jack, we were both at that alumni game. Great game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Great game.
That
great
was great
night.
Fun, and I think a lot of memories stirred for people who had watched games in Jenison Fieldhouse. You remember what it was like when we used to sit up in that overhang?
Yep.
And you see that basket going across, back and forth, running the statistics. But it was something about Jenison Fieldhouse, and I think a lot of people who've never been there got a flavor for it that weekend.
Yes, and everybody said the popcorn was the best, smelled the best.
You would know. You're Mr. Popcorn. Yes, so, you know, you ought to do a book on popcorn in the Midwest or something.
You know, and that was the first thing Tom came out of Tom's mouth was the popcorn.
Yeah.
He smelled the popcorn when he came in.
Well, let me ask you, because you've been to so many high school venues, and sometimes they have the best popcorn, but of all the places you've been, all the games, where's the one place when you know you're going there, you say, that's a bag of popcorn?
That's about every place. I don't hardly have any bad places about popcorn. Most of the popcorn I have is just good. And we in high schools, the high schools, I must admit, they do it really good around here.
Yeah,
they just do it very well. And so I'm always pleased at the popcorn I get when I go to the high school games.
You know, that is one of my big weaknesses. I'm trying to lose weight, as you know, mm-hmm. And I've been going to movies. And at movie theater popcorn, I just can't not get a box
or bag.
Or, you know, sometimes you've got someone, you get one of those big tubs, and you just can't resist it.
Well, let's see what our good friend Jake Boss. Jake, do you have that same weakness that we have of popcorn?
No doubt about it. No question. You put a little butter on there, it's over.
Hey, Jack. Jake, what kind of team do you expect to have this year? I know it's going to be a young team.
Well, yeah. You know, we've got some new faces, obviously, in our infield. And, some new faces, but maybe a guy or two that's playing a different position. I think you know, we lost our third baseman, our second baseman to the draft last year, and our shortstop graduated. So, you know, if the season started today, I think Johnny Martinez, who's a senior for us, who's caught and kind of been a utility player, will probably see a lot of time at third base. And then we've got two new guys up the middle, and Ryan Richardson, and as a junior college transfer, and then sophomore Kevin Gergen. And so, you know, we're confident in those guys and their abilities, and they're going to get their opportunity. And but, you know, on the good, on the positive side of it for us, you know, the outfield is all back. Most of the pitching is back. We've added some very good young arms to that staff, and we've got some depth there. And we're very deep behind the plate, and all our catchers are back as well. So, you know, we feel good about things right now, and you know, we start practice on Friday, so we're excited to get rolling.
Jake, what are some of the names that Michigan State baseball fans are going to get to know this year they haven't seen before, especially from this freshman class?
Well, you know, I think first and foremost on the mound, you know, a local kid, Justin Allman, is a kid that's very talented, was a high school draft, 18th round draft pick by Kansas City, and Justin decided to come to school and get his education, and you know, he's a special arm. He's a very talented young man who I think for us this year is going to close for us, and you know, he's a guy that can come back on short rest, and he's a bulldog, and you know, he's very live arm with a good breaking ball, and we like him at the end of the game. You know, there's no doubt about it. We also have a freshman left-hander named Anthony Misevich, a young man from Anchor Bay who's kind of in that same mold, but more of a you know, starter or a long relief type of guy. So those two guys on the mound, I think, you know, are going to be very, very good. And you know, we played a lot of freshmen last year, and so those guys obviously are now sophomores. And so, you know, guys like Jimmy Pickens and Ryan Krill and Blaze Salter, Tony Checkey, those guys will be in their second year. And I think, you know, they've had very good summers and very good falls. And you know, we're excited to see them continue to grow.
What do you expect from Cam Gibson, Jake?
Well, you know, Cam's very athletic. He runs extremely well. His arm strength is not quite there yet. And sounds like his dad when he was a... Yeah, there's a lot of similarities there. They are. And, you know, so, yeah, and he can hit for a little bit of power, handled the bat very well, plays the short game very well. He's probably our fourth outfielder right now coming into the season. And, you know, just like his father, just an ultra-competitive young man who does not like to lose. And so it's, you know, you need to have those guys in your dugout and on the field for you. And, you know, we're happy that he's here.
And you know, Jake, that those first two pitchers you named, especially the first one from out in Holt, he is really, I got a chance to see him pitch a couple of games, and wow, he is really good.
Well, he really is a talented young man, like I said, and you know, he's taking that next step from you know, to the college level, learning a slider and really kind of perfecting that breaking ball and you know, understanding that, you know, he's not going to be able to get his fastball by everybody at this level. And, you know, I don't think there's any question that he made the right decision in coming to school, because it's a great opportunity for him to fine-tune those skills. And really, you know, he's got a chance in 3 years to be he could be a top-five round draft pick. And he's then, you know, at that point, he's really made himself a lot of money. And so, again, we're happy to have him. And he's going to be at the end of the game, I think, for us this year. And we may move him to a starting role next year. As a sophomore.
Jake, how unusual is it in the Big Ten to have a freshman closer, a guy you're going to hand the ball to right out of the chute and say it's yours to finish these games?
Yeah, I think it's very unusual, Jack. I think it's something that you don't see a whole lot. And, you know, the interesting thing about Justin is he's a cool customer. He doesn't get rattled. He's a very level-headed young man and again, an intense competitor. And he's a quiet kid. But he's a bulldog when he gets out on the mound, and I don't think he's going to get shaken or rattled by anything in those pressure situations. I think that's what a lot of guys say they really live for, but when it comes down to it, I think, you know, Justin's a kid that's going to be able to handle it very well.
And yes, and that's the thing, Jake. You've got such a good nucleus of good young players, and we can see this team, if they stay together and don't leave or anything, you might have a team together for the next 4 to 5 years.
Well, you know, I appreciate that, Earl. I think it's something that where we've really tried to build it with some depth on the mound first and foremost. And we've all, myself and my staff, been doing this for a while, and I think, you know, we understand that if you're going to win, you have to be deep on the mound. And so we feel like we're in a pretty good place there and really have it spread out, I think, as far as the talent and the age, you know, of some of our guys. And, you know, really you plan on losing guys after the third year based on the pro draft rules and things like that. And so you kind of prepare for it a little bit, but not to the extent that some of the southern schools can with their scholarship money. So, you know, again, depth for us on the mound is going to be really important. And we'll always have some young guys that are going to get an opportunity. And we feel good about where they're at and how they work. So, I think, again, it's a situation where, we may be able to fake it, you know, while these young guys get a chance to get their feet wet in college baseball. And then by the Big Ten season, hopefully they're ready to go.
Michigan State baseball coach Jake Boss Jr., our guest here on News Talk 870 Sports. Jake, I saw some of your players yesterday crossing Shaw Lane, and they had the bats over their shoulders and their gloves. They're wearing shorts and getting ready to work out indoors and over at the Duffy Doherty building. But can you take us through the pre-Big Ten part of your schedule, where you're going, and how much of your season is before the fans here ever see you play?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we open up, our first game is February 15th, and we'll be in Greenville, South Carolina, at the home of the Greenville Drive at Ford Field there. And an alum, Craig Brown, who's a Michigan State alum, owns that team, and they're affiliate of the Boston Red Sox. So we'll play our first three games there that weekend against Furman, Miami of Ohio, and Northwestern. Ironically, we go back there the next weekend for another round-robin tournament. This time, Western Carolina and Cincinnati are involved, along with Furman again in Miami of Ohio. The weekend after that is a spring trip. We go to Austin Peay for three games. We go over to Tennessee Tech for two on the midweek, and then we play at fifth-ranked Kentucky in the back end of the spring trip. And then the following weekend, which is March 15th, we head out to Santa Clara for three games. So, you know, before we open up our home season. So I think that's, you know, what, close to 13 or 15 games, I believe, that are on the road before we play at home. Our first scheduled home date is March 22nd against Oakland University, and that'll be a four-game series that weekend. So it's a challenge when you play your first 15 to 18 games on the road, but it's the way it is in college baseball for us in the North. And our guys are used to it. They enjoy going different places and seeing different atmospheres and playing different opponents like that. It's a good precursor, I think, and a good good way to get ready for the end of the year, I think, in a regional type of atmosphere. It's like I said, it is what it is, and it'd be nice to play at home sooner, believe me.
we got a caller on the line, so let's go to the phones and see what the caller has to say. We have Michael from Saginaw. Michael, how you doing?
How you doing there, Earl? Happy Martin Luther King's birthday to everybody and everyone. I just got a question for Jake. When you played Purdue last year, I know Purdue won the Big Ten for years, and for the first time in a long time. I remember one of their best players was recommended by one of the alumni, or one of the alumni that went to Purdue back in the days. How many alumni recommend you ball players? I'm just curious.
Well, Michael, that's a good question, and I can tell you we get recommendations from alums almost daily. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different ways that you can stumble across a young man, and certainly alumni are able to help us there. We get a lot of help from high school coaches and professional scouts and things of that nature. We have a camp coming up this weekend. We'll have some kids at camp this weekend, and so, you know, you never know how you're going to find a guy, and there are some interesting stories about how you do that. We've even had our football coaches that have helped us, you know, in recognizing a dual sport athlete, and so there's all kinds of ways that you find them.
Would you recommend that your players play just baseball, or you recommend, if you had a multi-choice athlete, would you want them to play for like football or basketball or wrestle?
Well, at the high school level, you know, we like our guys to play more than one sport. And I think it's good when guys play, you know, two and three sports. I've always said you can't replicate standing at the free throw line with 2 seconds left down one, you know. And I think it's good to be able to play football in the fall. And really, it puts them in different situations, which helps them on the field. And it also, you know, saves some of their arm and avoids, you know, kind of some burnout for some guys that play all year long. And so I think it's good. I think it helps create a well-rounded athlete. And by the time we get them, you know, it's going to be year-round at our level. And so, you know, it's good for them to enjoy those different sports.
Here's one more question, and I'll pass it on to other people. But the issue of arm strength. I know back in the 70s when I watched baseball that the outfielders could throw from right field all the way to third base without they could overthrow the cutoff man, but they always hit the target. Or the center fielder can run in and set itself and throw all the way home without the ball bouncing the home. What can you do as a coach to improve their arm strength? I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
Well, as far as what we can do with where we're at in the north, we really work hard on building arm strength in the fall and all the way up until Christmas break, really. And we have a long toss program that we put in place for our guys and get them really throwing long, and they get a couple weeks off for Christmas break. But, once they get back to school, they're throwing again. They're throwing right now, as a matter of fact. And, I think guys don't throw enough. And I think when you can throw every day and throw properly without, you know, getting hurt, I think that's what really is going to improve arm strength. And so, you know, we typically see with our guys, you know, obviously at the beginning of the year, their arm strength may not be what it is at the end of the year. And, there's still some time that they have to get their arms in shape. But by the end of April, early May, you know, those guys are ready to go, and arm strengths are pretty good.
Jake, I had one other recruiting question for you. We all remember what it was like over at Cobes Field and the romance of walking across campus and seeing games. It's a fabulous facility now over at McLean Stadium. And if any of the listeners have not been over there, I strongly encourage you to stop by there this spring. But what difference has that facility made for you in recruiting?
Well, it really has made a huge difference, Jack. I think, it gives us a wow factor, that we didn't have before. And I think, the old, adage about first impressions is certainly true. And when we can bring a young man out there on a spring, day before one of our games, or even in the fall before a football game, and show them, a facility like that with the atmosphere that we have down there, it's really, something where they can kind of envision themselves playing. And you can preach to them about the atmosphere of the place, and the setting is really second to none, in my opinion. And so it's a place where I think guys can really, feel comfortable and see themselves playing in. And the detail that our grounds crew, and our turf manager takes with that field is, again, second to none. And so I think it's a place where we wanted it to stand out. We wanted it to be a place where kids really wanted to come and play, and that they certainly have achieved that.
Hey, Jack, is there a difference in between when you're throwing inside in the winter as opposed to playing? I know you don't get a chance to play much outside, but is there a difference, big difference, between playing inside and then playing outdoors?
Well, sure. I mean, there's a difference in, what we can do when we work out, right now in the football building, and it's not, you can't see fly balls, and the depth perception is a little bit different. But again, our guys are so used to that I think by the time we're able to get outside, that all comes back in a hurry. And so we take a lot of the time in those indoor practices to really kind of work on, some different things as far as situational baseball and things that we really need to take some time on and really pay attention to the details on and get that accomplished inside. And then when we do go outside, the depth perception and things like that come back fairly quickly.
Okay, the time now is 40 minutes after the hour, 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
On the next Fresh Air, on the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, we talk with Carolyn Jones about dealing with Texas's mandatory sonogram law when she had her abortion. She's since written a series in the Texas Observer about new restrictions on abortion in Texas. And we'll hear from Carolyn Klein, the CEO of Involved for Life in Dallas, which offers alternatives to abortion. Join us.
And that's Alternatives to Abortion coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Our high today, 10 degrees, partly sunny with scattered snow. A low near zero tonight, mostly cloudy with scattered snow. Cloudy Wednesday and scattered snow with a high of 19. We'll stay in the upper teens for a high Thursday. It'll become partly sunny with some scattered snow. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open at 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. Jake, we haven't had a chance to ask you yet, but how is the hitting looking this year? What kind of hitters do you have to add? Spray hitters? Any power hitters? How's the hitting looking this year?
Well, you know, Earl, that's a good question. I think we have a lot of depth, and we've got a wide variety of guys that can do a lot of different things. You know, I think at the top of the lineup, you'll see our center fielder Tony Cecchi, who really is a left-handed hitter, really a kid that plays hard. He's a kid that really leaves it all on the field. And, you know, he's prototypical leadoff hitter where, you know, he's going to put the ball in play. He really runs well. He's able to steal bases and puts a lot of pressure on defense, you know, to make plays. Also, you know, returning for us as a senior this year, but first team All Big Ten outfielder Jordan Kerr, who's a guy that's got some gap-to-gap power and, you know, probably the best overall hitter on our ball club last year. We've got a good mix of power as well with first baseman Ryan Krill. Right fielder Jimmy Pickens, two catchers that, you know, in Joel Fisher and Blaze Salter, both are very big, strong guys. So, you know, we have an interesting balance, I think, that, you know, with some speed and some power that, you know, to be quite honest, we're pretty excited about.
Jake, you mentioned Tony Cecchi at the top of the order, and I remember the first game I saw last year, and I walked past him and I said, man, he looks like about a 10th grader. And he's about 5'9 or 5'8, about 150 pounds and soaking wet. And he is really fun to watch. I mean, he gets the batter ball, makes things happen, and flies around the field. He's really a delight. Fans love him.
Well, he really is, Jack. And, you know, Coach Sykes, Graham Sykes, our recruiting coordinator, also coaches our outfielders. And he came upon Tony, you know, late in the summer after his junior year. And we brought Tony up to camp, and he, you know, that's the first thing he showed us is just the way he plays the game. It is fun to watch him, you know, and he plays with a reckless abandon. He's a guy that you know, isn't afraid to take a chance, and you know, those guys that run well and are always a threat to take an extra base are pretty important. And so, you know, speed kills, and he's a guy that really does run well. So, you know, his arm strength needs to improve a little bit, but you know, his routes in the outfield are very, very good. And you know, he replaced Brandon Eckerle,
right.
You know, who was a first team All Big Ten guy and an All American and you know, the Big Ten batting champion. So he had some big shoes to fill a year ago and did a heck of a job for us.
Jake, I wanted to ask you one question dealing with Major League Baseball and the recent announcement that no one was going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame in this class. And how do you think that should be handled, and with all the performance-enhancing drug suspicions that are out there, are they just going to wipe out this generation, or would you expect eventually some of these guys are going to get in?
Well, that's a great question, Jack. I don't know. I mean, the way that the voting seems to be going for some of these guys, like, you know, McGuire and Bonds and things like that, it seems to be starting to dwindle for them. And, you know, it could conceivably wipe out, you know, some of the best players of this generation because of the steroid scandal. And so it'll be interesting to see which way it goes. I kind of flip-flop on it all the time. And you know, not only with that, with the Pete Rose thing, with the betting on baseball. And I know they're two different and separate incidents, but, you know, the play on the field, you know, it should speak for itself. And unfortunately, especially with these guys in the steroid area, you know, with some of those that may have used those performance enhancers, you just don't know. Now, I don't think there's any doubt that I think Barry Bonds was, you know, a heck of a player before he started allegedly taking steroids. And so, you know, there's a lot of different things to consider there. And to be honest with you, I'm glad I don't have a vote because those are some tough decisions for guys that are a lot smarter than me, believe me.
And Jack Morris, I guess, is coming to the end of his run, too.
Yeah.
He's got to make it, or
you talk about a competitor. You know, Jack Morris. You know, a guy that just, you know, there's a guy that you want the ball in his hand at the end of the year and at the end of the ball game. And so, you know, that's another one that's an interesting debate. You know, for whatever reason, those guys, you know, the sports writers haven't thought he's been worthy. I think, you know, and maybe we're a little biased too, because you know, growing up here, I mean, we've seen those guys really grown up with them. And so, you know, it's and who knows, maybe if they played in a different market or a bigger market, it could be different. It's tough to say.
Well, they said that Jack Morris would have the highest ERA of any pitcher in the Hall of Fame, but all I know is the managers in the postseason sure love to hand him the baseball.
No doubt about it. I mean, you talk about a guy like John Smoltz, too, and John's coming in to speak at our first pitch dinner in a couple weeks. And, you know, there's another guy that, although he's got a Cy Young Award as well, but who else would you rather have with the ball in the postseason? You know, I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Yes, there's such a lot to be said for the guys coming in and getting a chance to get in. But do you see, if when you look at all the guys and some of those guys who did use or probably used performance-enhancing drugs, hurt their cause, obviously, do you see them ever maybe even possibly getting a chance in?
Well, like I said, I think the way that it seems to be going with voting and with guys like McGuire and things like that, it certainly doesn't look like they're going to, it's too bad. I mean, I think it's a black eye in the game, as a whole. And, again, I don't know that McGuire hits as many home runs as he does without the enhancers, but there's no question that he would have been a heck of a player anyway. And so I think that's what some people need to, maybe take into consideration. I don't know what the right answer is. I don't know if they should be in, they shouldn't be in. I've got my own things to worry about here when we get ready for our season. So, to be honest, I haven't put a whole lot of thought into it. But I think the biggest thing is it's a shame that it's a black eye on our game.
And we saw Sunday the death of two baseball Hall of Famers,
right.
Earl Weaver, one of the top managers in history, and, of course, the great stand-a-man Musial. And
yes.
You look at Musial's statistics, even today, and he's second all-time in extra base hits. You're talking about a guy with career batting average in the 330s and the last guy to get 175 triples. I mean, it's amazing the way his numbers have held up.
It really is, and I think we were talking about this in the office the other day. I think the most amazing statistic for him is, the exact same amount of hits on the road as he did at home. And, you talk about a complete hitter. I mean, that's something, and Stan Musial and Danny Littweiler were very close. Mm-hmm. And before, Skip passed, we'd go down to Florida to visit him and just start to listen to some of those stories. And, he and Stan Musial were extremely close, and their wives were close. And it was, pretty special relationship that they had. I got to learn a little bit more about, Stan Musial as a human being and just what a first-class individual he was. So our game lost a good one in him. And also in Earl Weaver. I mean, you talk about a heck of a competitor. And I was... I know a few guys that played for him, and as crazy as he seemed to be in the dugout, those guys said that Earl would do anything for him. And so, it was baseball lost two good ones the other day.
Okay, got a question for you on the line, JC from Lansing. JC, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing? How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing well, yeah. JC. How are you?
Hey, when I grew up, I was I'm a lefty thrower, and I always wanted to be the catcher. I mean, that was my dream, to be a catcher. And the coach always told me, no, there ain't no left-handed catchers. And I'm like, why? And he never really could explain it other than if I threw it down to second base with a right-handed batter, I'd hit him in the back of the head. That was his explanation. And I'm like, well, what happens if a left-hander's batter's up and I'm a right-hander and I got to hit him? Isn't the right-handed catcher going to hit him in the right-handed batter in the head, the left, And he could never really explain it to me. Why isn't there any left-handed catchers in Major League Baseball, hardly?
Well, catchers are typically, especially in the big leagues, they're all right-handed. I think, throwing to second base is one thing, but you talk about throwing to third base, and I think it would be almost impossible for a left-handed catcher to throw a runner out at third base with a right-handed hitter up. Maybe that has a lot more to do with it than throwing the runner out. But, if your catcher executes his footwork the right way, the hitter really shouldn't matter. But, trying to throw out their runner stealing second or stealing third is going to be the bigger
That's
issue.
A lot more, okay. Because nobody really explained it to me, and that was always what I wanted to be, the catcher. And "No, there isn't any." And I go, "Well, let me be the first." You know, I'll be in the Hall of Fame, but I won't use steroids. But I think managers, another question I have is, I think managers in the major leagues, I don't know about college as much, although I do follow the Spartans, I think they kind of overmanage because I don't think it's their fault as much as everybody, and I don't know when it started, when you got a six-inning guy, a seven-inning guy, eight-inning guy, and if a guy's doing good, other than Verlander pretty much, then, you know, they go to that thing, even though, and how many times have you sat there and you go, "Don't pull this guy out. He's got a three-hitter going in the seventh inning. They can't touch him. Just let him go." But they're so worried about the pitch count. And but they, I think they feel that they have to use these guys because they're paying them, the seventh and eighth and ninth inning guys. Is that it, you think?
Well, yeah, I think there's no doubt the game has changed, you know, over the years. And, you know, the amount of complete games that are thrown now versus, you know, even 10 years ago or 20 years ago is dramatically different. And, you know, everything is so much more specialized now. And even coming up through the minor leagues, you know, guys are you know, trained to get, you know, maybe as a left-handed specialist, and that's what their one job is. And so they're, you know, they're trained from that, and once they get to the big leagues, it's a thing that you know, that they that they're look at the you know, the closer, and you know, 30, 40 years ago there really was no closer, and so now that is kind of, you know, that's evolved too, and that was probably the first one to start that whole movement, maybe. But yeah, it's the game is a lot different. The game has changed a lot. Now we work a little bit with pitch counts just because of you know, the fact that we start so early, and maybe guys, our arms aren't in shape. But once we're in shape, once the Big Ten season starts, it's you know, if you're throwing well, you know, I'm a big fan of leaving that guy in and letting him get it done. So
okay, well, we got a caller in for Jack. This is a guy that we know for a long, long time. Dean Howe is with us. Dean, how are you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I was driving home and I heard you guys talking about a trip to Wisconsin about throwing off the road there. Jack and I have had a few trips there, right, Jack?
We had a few. Well, in fact, we had one where I came up and Dean had gone through the buffet line. I don't know what he put on his plate, but I came up and I went to the wrong table and I made a comment and nearly got punched. And it was we had a lot of fun on the road, but it's good to hear your voice again,
yeah,
Dean.
I really enjoyed coming to that MSU alumni basketball game. I haven't been in Tennessee in 15 years, and you know, I covered all the Magic games there, right up to the Skiles, and boy, it was a great place. I wish they would have let us up in the old press box again, but our weight probably would have brought it down, right?
Yeah. There were a few of us that said, "You can go up there, but we don't know if we can get you out. We need the jaws of life to get Fred Heumann out of there."
That was really a trip, getting up there and getting down after a game, you know. But it was a lot, and the little thing I liked was the little cross from the radio booth.
Yeah,
that
basket.
Got the stats and stuff and everything, you know. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. It was nice seeing you, Jack, and just Earl, and all the guys, some of them used to cover. I couldn't believe Kevin Willis, how good he was, how shape he was.
Like, yeah.
He's almost 50 years old and got about 15 rebounds that game, so he could still play. Yeah, it was really, really a pleasure being there.
Well, it was great to see you. Jake, Do you remember those games as a kid coming over to Jensen Fieldhouse, your dad bringing you over there?
Absolutely. That was a lot of fun for me as a kid. I was at that game with the one that sticks out for me is you know, when Michigan State played Michigan and Scott Skiles and Antoine Joubert were going at it. And I'll never forget it, we were sitting on the west side and we were about the free throw line extended. And, you know, we had pretty good seats for that game. And watching Skiles and Joubert, you know, jaw back and forth was something that was pretty, you know, it was pretty funny to watch. And, you know, I went to Everett High School and Everett, you know, played those guys in the, I believe it was the quarterfinals when Antoine Joubert was in high school. If I remember correctly, it was at Charlotte High School. Mm-hmm. And so I had known a little bit about, you know, him before he got to Michigan. And so, that was something. We went to a lot of games, and there was a lot of fun in that building.
Another guy who wanted a piece of Antoine Joubert, going back to the high school days, was one of Dean's Flint buddies, Daryl Johnson. And he lit up Antoine a couple of times.
Down in Ann Arbor, especially.
Yeah.
It's fact, that was the year, if you remember, Michigan State won the Big Ten. Michigan won the Big Ten that year.
That's right.
Michigan State beat them twice. And the game at Ann Arbor, was, I was sitting right at courtside and heard that famous line by Skiles, come on, fat boy, shoot it up.
You know, that actually started at the end of the first game. Dino, remember this. They're on the court, and Scott's gone for 40. And he's fouled out Gary Grant and Antoine Joubert. And they're going off the court. And Joubert says, I'll get you in Ann Arbor. And Skiles says, not unless you drop 20, fat boy.
The thing about Skiles, I mean, he was the biggest trash talker probably around anywhere. But he could back it up, you know. But it was great seeing you guys over there. And I'll let you go talk about baseball because I love baseball. I can't wait to spring training. And, Coach, I wish you the best of luck with your baseball team this year, too.
Well, I appreciate that, Dean. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Dean Howe, one of the legends. I'll tell you what, of all the guys, Earl, that we have. He's one of the best.
Definitely one of the best. One that we've known, you know, all of our lives, basically.
Yeah.
Dean was just a great, great, great writer and a great talker. He could tell some stories. He could definitely tell some stories.
Killed a few brain cells with him on the road.
Yes. Yeah, and Jake, before we let you go, you know, there's just a few things we want to ask you. But one of the things was, you know, when guys, you know, I asked you earlier about the difference between guys playing indoors and outdoors. What about pitchers? Do they have much chance to pitch outdoors at all during the wintertime, or are they strictly indoors?
Well, you know, we're strictly indoors right now, and we've got, some dirt mounds in our hitting facility where they can, you know, put their spikes on and get out and throw, which is, it's a big deal, believe it or not. And so they'll throw live to hitters in those cages in there, in their spikes, and it gives us a pretty good advantage. But it does change, you know, things change when you do get outside. But like I said, the depth perception is different, and, it's different for everybody. But again, our guys are so used to it that it's something that they're accustomed to. They've done it every year since they were a little kid throwing. And it's something that really, once we get back out, we get in the swing of things pretty quickly.
Yes, I know when growing up in Flint, and I played a few baseball games there myself, it was always fun playing baseball, but what's happened? I mean, baseball just doesn't seem to be as much fun as anymore. We just, you know, we go by parks all the time, and we just don't see that many kids in parks these days.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said before, I guess times have changed. And, you know, when I was a kid, we would be out in the backyard playing until the sun went down. It doesn't seem to be like that anymore. I think, there's probably a lot of different factors, that are involved in that. You know, more options for kids now with, sports like, soccer, lacrosse, really starting to boom around our area. I think video games are probably a part of that, as well. It's just, again, there's a lot of different factors that, maybe are keeping kids inside in the summer. And I think it's too bad. But everything seems to be a lot more organized now than it used to be when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And a lot of these kids are playing on summer teams that play 70 and 80 games, and that's fine. But, I think there's a lot to be said for going out and just kind of, playing and competing on your own. I think that's an important part for those guys.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jake. We always appreciate talking with you, and we'll talk with you again as we get closer to spring ball.
Okay, guys, I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. Yeah,
all right. Bye-bye.
And you know, Jack, we when we talk about the spring balls and spring games and all that, it brings back a lot of memories.
Absolutely. Well, we got a lot of them. That means that we've been around a while, Earl.
It does. It does. Yeah, we've seen a lot of games, and we got to go now. It's almost that time. I want to thank you all for listening, and thank you all for calling, and stay tuned for more sports right here on WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday, 1:05 to 2 o'clock on AM 870. Have yourself a safe and pleasant evening, and we'll see you tomorrow right here on WKAR.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.